Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Welcome to the Dog Pod, your home for fans of the University of Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm here with Law Dog and Mitch, ready. And oh, how much sweeter week one 2022 is when you actually win. Kent State came to Montlake to help us break in the dawn of the DeBoer era. We got Portland State this week. Lots of Pac-12 action to talk about. Fellas, should we get into it?
Oof, let's do it.
All right. Kent State, we were all there in person. Mitch and I hosted the tailgate. I think we logged a solid 14 to 16 hours in Montlake this week. All worth it. What did we see on the field? Let's hear it. Talk me through the game, Law Dog.
So, I mean, could you have gotten off to a better start, guys? Colin Schley, noted Golden Flashes quarterback, steps back, throws over the middle, and Asa Turner reaches in, grabbing it for the interception on the very first play of the game. Then we get a big dose of Wayne Tuilapapa. So he gets it a few times, and they're facing a fourth and very short. And all of a sudden, you get the handoff 28 yards out, a hole the size of Montana, guys. No pun intended.
Really? You had to bring it up.
He waltzes into the end zone for 28 yards out. So the Huskies go up 7-0 very early. Kent State grabs a first down, but they punt it back. The Huskies false started on their own 10. Then from 3rd and 9, Penix runs into that open middle of the field, and then they get that tough spot where he started the slide, not where, you know, 5 yards downfield where he kind of ended up. So they leave it with a fourth, half a yard at the Huskies 32-yard line. Really surprised to see DeBoer go for it in this situation, honestly. But they did, and they made it. They used kind of this tricky surprise snap play. And I don't know if this is just a pet peeve of mine, but it's like, you got that play in your playbook? Why are we bringing it out on the second series of the year against Kent State? I feel like let's save that one for when we really need it. So hopefully they either have a playbook full of those, or, I mean, now you just gave everybody film on that. You're never going to get away with it again for the rest of the season. And maybe DeBoer's entire career, right?
Maybe you're hoping that the next time you're more likely to draw someone off sides, because I think you're going to pull that out of a hat again, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, so anyway, okay, Penix, then 4 plays later, he finds the corner route, Taj Davis, who got the surprise start in this game, 32-yard touchdown in the corner, so Huskies are 14-0. Then the next kick, guys, special teams, kind of a bugaboo. Mitch, can't wait to hear what you have to say about the kick. There was, like, no hang time on this thing, right? Kent State returns it out to midfield. Peyton Henry actually has to make the shoulder, like, body check tackle. And then on the very next play, Schley goes down to that same corner route and connects with Devontae Walker, burns Michelle Powell for a 47-yard touchdown. So it's 14-7, and the Golden Flashes, like, aren't looking too bad here. But the Huskies just kept grinding in this game. They really ground them down into a dust. And it started right here with 10-play, 75-yard drive. Cam Davis gets the TD. They go up 21-7. Golden Flashes go 6 and out again. And then Penix really rolling at this point. He's already 9 for 12, but he keeps it going with another 83-yard, 10-play drive. This is going to be a theme, right? The Huskies get 28-7 lead with the pass to Roma Dunze. And then Kent State, they come back with a field goal. And then Giles Jackson fumbles on the kickoff. And the Flashes grab another field goal. So now it's 28-13, closing in on the end of the half. The Huskies do grab one more field goal in their two-minute offense at the end to make it 31-13 at half. But this just, it felt like there was a kind of some meat on the bone here, right? Like, this game should have been put away at halftime based on how well the Husky offense was playing. But a couple of big mistakes were keeping the Flashes in, especially on D and special teams. So then Turner grabs another interception to start the second half. The Huskies do have to punt, and the Golden Flashes get on the board one more time with a touchdown. They make it 38-20. Sorry, I missed McMillan's first touchdown to start out of the locker room. Again, 74 yards and 13 plays.
Nice
big,
drive.
Long, grinding drives. Then the Flashers cut it to 38-20, and then Penix throws his fourth TD pass of the game to Jalen McMillan, making it 45-20, and after that, it was all scrubbed. Overall, Penix finishes 26-39, 345 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Should have been player of the week, guys. 10 different receivers catching a pass in this one, and the Huskies win at 45-20. A nice opening game, especially after the ghosts of the Grizzlies that were haunting us in Husky Stadium on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Well, not a bad look. And at the end of the game, they cover. We could talk a little bit about the different units and see how they look. I thought the crowd was there rocking as much as you can be for a MAC opponent on a Labor Day weekend. That was nice to see. And you know, look, it was fun. It was fun. It definitely was exciting to see an offense that had a little bit of creativity behind it. Let me talk about that defense, though. Defense was all new look, an all new look. You know, you think of, we haven't seen this in 7 years. Coach Inge and Burrell showed us what I think is high pressure, high risk defense is going to look like. 65 Huskies registered a snap all up in this game. So a ton of guys got reps, and that's what you want. Not only to get the win comfortably, get some of those guys reps they might not get elsewhere. And as you see, like, what more do you want from the defense? First play of the season is an Asa Turner interception. And what I love seeing in the post game interviews is he talked about, you know, apparently this guy just lives in the stadium. Watches so much film, and his coaches had just said, look, they run this RPO. You're going to see this thing, just be ready for it. And he sniffed it out, knew exactly what was coming. It was in the right spot
on the first play.
Yeah, that's great.
The line, look, they held Kent State to under 150 yards, you know, on the ground. And that was our Achilles heel last year. Couldn't stop anybody on the ground. Couldn't stop Montana on the ground. Thule was very disruptive. Good to see MJ Ollie out there looking healthy. Lots of guys got time. Jacob Bandis, Voight Tanufi, I thought looked real strong. Fatui Tuitele, lots of guys got time. As advertised, we were talking last week about, you know, are there really going to be 4 different edge players that get time? Braylon Trice and Jeremiah Martin, they got the first team reps for sure. You know, at the end of the game, ZTF and Savelle came in later, and maybe they all got the same snap count by the end. But they were clearly running second, and the running first was Trice and Jeremiah Martin. Everybody struggled pressuring and containing Colin Schley, the quarterback. Everybody. And I think this is worrying for me, given who we're facing, is you look at some of the Pac-12 play, and it wasn't all pretty. We'll get into it later. But there's a lot of elusive quarterback play in the Pac-12, and that's a little bit concerning.
Yeah, there were a few times they got that backfield and couldn't finish, right? That's what you're talking about.
How many times they had hands on the quarterback and finished the game with one actual sack, right? Linebacker play, I thought this was much improved. Tupitala, 9 tackles and a tackle for loss. He was the strongest one out there. Bruner, Molly Hamuli, they all saw time as well. The DBs, I talked about this last week, is I thought this might be the year that we don't just reload with a bunch of NFL talent. Now, look, they got 3 interceptions, you know, so that's that big risk, big reward. But they struggled with Dante Cephas. You know, real strong, that Kent State receiver, real strong. Jordan Perryman, that injury to me, scary, right? And we struggled when he was in, though. I mean, I think he got burned a few times and wasn't even close to where he should be. Michelle Powell, I mean, we talked about that touchdown in the corner. It was a beautiful ball, but I think we're used to seeing safety help over the top, that bend don't break, and he's out there on an island and just got burned. Safeties, I thought, looked really good. Alex Cook, man, so cool to see him coming into his own. And, you know, look, Asa Turner with the 2 picks, you got to love that. It has still a handful of missed tackles, and he owned up to that in post game. Jordan Perryman, I think, you know, look, let's see what happens. I worry a little bit about when it's a, you know, non-contact related injury, and we're not talking about him. You know, but we had 2 picks by Asa Williams, 1 by Alex Cook. If Perryman's out, is it Julius Irvin? Look, I don't know. Numbers all up, they looked good. Love that they can stop the run. Love this new look defense. Love that they got the rest of their starters, created 3 turnovers, shut down an offense that last year was averaging 500 yards a game, and they held them to 340. So in the end, lots to clean up, but I was pleased.
Yeah, no, I'd agree, BT. And, you know, I'm excited about this new Husky linebacker role that they flashed. I mean, that was probably their leading tackler, right? Alfonso, is it Tupitola? Tupitola, I can never pronounce his name correctly, but gosh, it seemed disruptive. So that's exciting. They're going to be aggressive. Are they going to give up some bigger plays? Yes. But man, didn't it feel like we were always playing bend don't break? Felt like our entire defense last year was bend don't break on first down. Please bend don't break and don't give up 8 yards rushing. At least they're more aggressive now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were allowed the offense to get back on the field and weren't gassed by the end of these long drives. So I was
pretty well. It's a different philosophy. We are seeing a completely mm-hmm. different philosophy. And for the last 8 years, we've been treated to one of the best defenses in the conference, if not the best. And so, you know, you got new coaches, you got new personnel, you got transfers, you got all kinds of things changing. And so it's going to be different.
That's right.
If you throw for 400 yards and four touchdowns every game, then you can afford to break a couple times. Whereas if you have to win games 12-10, then you can't. So, right. You know, I think we're going to see how this shakes out, you know, as the season goes on. And, you know, we get to see them. Let's see what they can do against a FCS opponent this week. And if they can finish those plays in the backfield, if they can cover a little bit better, and if they could show us that, then I think that's a good step.
Keep that turnover margin high. How about that offense? What do you think? Let's give some grades up.
So, I mean, I think you got to give the game ball to Michael Penix. I know the actual game ball went to Coach DeBoer, but I mean, Penix came out, I think, really in command, in control. The offensive line gave him a tremendous pocket to throw in all day. I will say, on the running game side, you take away Tualapapa's 28-yard run, and you basically have your top three backs going for 76 yards on 27 carries. So less than 3 yards a carry there. I'm not super excited about that. That's not a Kent State team that had a vaunted defense either. So I think, with, you know, 2 years ago, the offensive line had the second lowest sack percentage in the country, and they had a reputation. Everyone thought that they were better than they were, frankly, going into last season. And so we know they can pass protect, right? That's the strength of this O-line. But how are we going to get those fourth and ones if we're going to be going for it on our own 30-yard line with the game still in doubt against Kent State? You know, you better get those. And that's something where I'm going to be watching that. I'm going to be looking for that. Receivers-wise, I mean, you can't ask for anything more than these guys. And you know, the other thing I really liked about watching this offense was just watching them just not only spread it around. That was clear they were going to do that from the beginning, but just mixing up the types of plays, right? You go deep on a corner route, then you're going back to a screen, you're going, you know, to a crossing route, to, you know, a double reverse, and just all kinds of things to keep that, you know, defense guessing and off balance. And that's just something that we've been missing in this offense for a long time. Mm-hmm. And maybe since Jonathan Smith left. Frankly. And so it's just great to see. And I mean, it seems like they're willing to break out quite a bit of the playbook in week one. I'm really anxious to see, you know, what it's going to look like when we get into conference play. I mean, what more there might be, because, you know, they're going to save some things for those conference games. But all in all, I thought they pleased in a big way. There were a few drops, including that big one from Devin Culp. I talked about that last week. Is like, can he just have a good game and get rolling in the right direction? He ended up with a couple of catches, but I mean, there was that one drop, and it's just like, man, are you ever going to not drop the ball? So kind of ending on a downer there, but Mitch, tell me what you think.
Yeah, no, I mean, from a receiver perspective, you called it exactly what I was going to call out. From a improvement perspective, Culp always just makes me a little bit nervous. That drop reception against Oregon just haunts me from years past on a fourth down conversion. That would have been a huge play. But man, Penix really spreading the ball around to 10 different receivers. He looks sharp, guys. Like, I mean, it's nice to see a quarterback with confidence throwing the rock like that. And I forgot how much I missed that, and seeing him look comfortable back there. And really, you know, it feels very true that he has that offense very well down, and it's going to be exciting to watch him. My hope is we can just keep him upright. I love seeing him do those quarterback slides to say, hey, you know what? Like, it's the first game of the season, man. It's a long game here. He doesn't need to pick up a yard or two more. Yep. So that was great. It was, high grades there.
What about that offensive line, though? The only thing that concerned me is the interior side of it seemed to struggle with the Kent State nose tackle, who was a really large, imposing player. The name kind of slips me a little bit, but that concerns me when we're going to face some offenses in conference play in Michigan State that have that type of physicality across the front.
I think offensive line still has a fair amount to prove, honestly. I mean, like we said, the pass protection was there, but I mean, you know, if you're not able to put up 3 yards a carry against Kent State, you know, that portends some troubles maybe still coming on the way.
Now
maybe it helps with the all Pac-12 returner Jackson Kirkland coming back. But you're right, we got to watch that, right? And you know, my big takeaway, and we'll talk about some areas as well, is there were clearly some things that they can improve on and clean up. And it's going to be fascinating when we, you know, talk about Portland State a little bit, just to see where they coach up some of those areas, see which areas they tighten up. That's going to be the fun part, I think, about watching the Portland State game.
It will be. I worry about Jackson Kirkland, and that until I see him in warmups doing warm-up things, I don't think we should bank on him coming back anytime soon.
Interesting. You
know, where MJ Ali, we saw out there running around. I mean, quickly. I don't know. I'm not at every practice, but are we seeing Jackson Kirkland out there making football players, running up and down the, you know, at full speed practice, ready to go next week? I don't know. I think
it seems like they're hedging on that. Yeah, it seems like they're hedging on that. In any case, I think they are trying to get him back for Michigan State.
Right.
Without a doubt. So.
Well, we may have saved the worst for the last, but it wasn't pretty. Should we talk special teams?
Sure. Let's talk some special teams. So, first off, glass half full. Giles Jackson, 4 kickoff returns for 92 yards, right? Average 23 along a 30. That's great. That's exciting to see. That's explosiveness. Unfortunately, one of those was the fumble, which came at an inopportune moment. But, you know, I mean, again, it feels nice to have a returner that's averaging that many yards on a return. And last year, you know, quite frankly, we were kind of hoping to see that from him, but, you know, we didn't really. So hopefully that's going in the right direction. On the flip side is the opposite side of the house with the Kent State kick returns. They had 3 guys return 6 kicks for 140 yards, an average of 24 yards with a long of 52. That was no bueno, right? Like there are several times where you're starting to get uncomfortable and be like, okay, what's going to happen here? Especially when you start talking about some of the other teams we're going to face this year with a higher level of talent, that's certainly concerning. You know, and again, this is what I'm going to be looking for in Portland State, right? Like if they give up some long returns against Portland State, that's really kind of a problem area for them for sure. You know, Peyton Henry came on, he did his job from a kicking perspective, hit his extra points, hit a 38 yarder. So that's great. Field goal. That was good. So that's a positive step. Feel really good with where that's at. But for the most part, man, we got to watch those kick returns. And then gosh, Giles, we love you, dude, but just ball security, man, ball security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. You can see the film where he's carrying that thing. It was like, is it up on his shoulder? Like, what is he? I think sometimes you get guys who are like, this is Kent State. We got a little bit of a margin. Let me ball out and show off. And he's got the speed. But it was definitely frustrating. And they need to clean it up. And as we always talk about, special teams is all about preparation and coaching and how much emphasis they put on it. And they better be able to clean this up within a week.
You know, I'm not sure about Peyton Henry. I know, you know, he's very solid and reliable in terms of field goals, and even in big misses that he's had in the past, he's come back and recovered from that and had a good success rate. But the kickoffs it's just been a problem for years. And the one was just such a low liner. And you know, maybe it's a one-off, but I think that's something else somebody watching too. I think that's affecting the kick coverage, Mitch, quite a bit.
That's interesting. And we've seen that, you know, BT, we've commented to that from since the CFP game, right? How our kickers, for whatever reason, would always get Alabama the ball on like the 5-7 yard line. And the Alabama kicker would be putting it through the uprights.
Through the uprights.
Right? Like, it's been kind of interesting, Law Dog, that you say that now for years on when we could get a really good kickoff specialist.
Yep. Yeah, it's been some time, but we've had a long run of punters who've done really well, but the kickoff has been tough for a while. Well, hey, let's hope they get this cleaned up, and let's talk a little bit about Portland State, who's coming in town this week, 1 o'clock on Pac-12 Network Washington. So there's going to be very few eyeballs, TV eyeballs on this. and this is a Portland State team who gave San Jose State some fits last week. They actually played on Thursday night, so they're going to be coming in with a little bit of extra rest against us with 10 days. And San Jose State needed every minute of that game to pull off a 21-17 win. Look, we're not going to sit here and act like we are experts in the of Portland State, but a couple things that I want to see. We've already talked about this, but on the defensive side of the ball, is Jordan Perryman out? And if he's not, you know, is it going to be Julius Erving? And how does he respond with this new bend, don't break? You know, do these DBs understand their assignments and cannot get burned like they did last week? I think Dom Hampton is coming into his own in this Husky position, but it's a new position in which a lot is being asked of him, and I want to continue to see that. And let's see how these edges develop, and is it really a four-man rotation? Are we going to see, you know, two of them come in there, and let's stop this, you know, slow down, to continue to completely shut down the run attack? I want to see a little bit more of that. And if they can continue on this pick rate, 2-3 picks a game, 2-3 turnovers a game, I like it. What else do you guys want to see?
Personally, I want to see Penix out after the first half, right? Get in there,
demo,
get your reps. Yeah, and like, hey, you know, let's see where the backup quarterback competition. But to me, like, that would feel really healthy that Penix gets a half. We've got a very, very 20-point comfortable lead, and you know, the defense is in control. We talked about special teams. Would like to see that cleaned up. That to me was what a successful game would look like. Law Dog.
Yeah, I just really want to see this team able to run the ball. If you can't run it this week, when are you going to be able to run it this year? So I want to see that, and hopefully, you know, they won't lean so heavily on Penix in that passing game. You know, to the point where they commit to the run a little bit. So I want to see one of these backs kind of take off. I still, Tuella Papa, you know, is still a little bit of an unknown quantity. And also, I think defensively, like we kind of talked about the recap, I want to see that the defensive line get in the backfield and wreak some havoc, you know, because I think that's going to be the key to this defense doing well. You've got veterans up there. You should, in theory, on paper, have a good pass rush. So I think it'd be important for us to be, again, if you can't rush the passer in this game on Saturday, when are you going to be able to do it?
Well, get ready for more of the same. The Portland State quarterback threw two interceptions and is their leading rusher.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going to see more of the same this week. You know, no surprises. Let's put this thing together and don't look ahead. I'm excited for it. Hey, this was just one of many Pac-12 games. First of all, I mean, come on, this was fun to get back, see some exciting offense, and you know, see what Kalen DeBoer is made of and how everyone was rallying around. And this is a great start to the Husky season. Not perfect, but I think the team realizes that and is going to hold themselves to a higher standard. Ton of Pac-12 play, though. It was cool to start this thing off on a Thursday night. 7 p.m. on Pac-12. Remember, ASU hosted Northern Arizona. Northern Arizona upset Arizona last year. They were 25.5-point favorite. They'd absolutely dominated 40-3 over the Lumberjacks. The transfers really ran the show. Emory Jones, I thought, was efficient. He ran for a couple of touchdowns. X-Holiday, 116 and a pair of TDs. 43 new players for ASU this year. Just crazy. And they absolutely own the line of scrimmage. Just wild to see.
Right. I don't know that the dumpster fire, you know, we all kind of chuckled when Herm Edwards was hired, right? And it's like, it's eventually going to turn into kind of a dumpster fire there. And we may get there pretty soon. But, like, they've still got some talent on the roster, even though they lost Daniels, the quarterback. They could be 6-6, 7-5 team, and we got to play down there. I'm not necessarily, you know, just ready to put that one in pen yet.
We shouldn't be, and they looked more dominating than we did in their opener. So, you know, let's see what they come to town. Here's another, this one was tough. And you want to talk about a team that is really struggling. Friday night, CU hosted TCU, 7 p.m. at ESPN. Horned Frogs were a 12.5-point favorite. TCU just coming off a 5-7 season. They absolutely beat down the Buffs 38-13. Our old pal Sonny Dykes had the Horned Frogs rolling. This thing fully got out of hand in the second half. They scored on every single drive in Boulder.
And I don't understand what's going on at Colorado with their legacy and their pride in national championships. Like, man, like they've got to get that thing back on track, and they're in a tough spot right now. I understand the frustration from the fans. That's a fan base that has been around for a long time, that has a lot of tradition, and you know they're upset, right? You know, BT, we've heard that from some of our old peer podcasters down there.
100%. Look, this is an athletic department that's kind of a mess, and that's when you get into a spot in which Carl Durrell is your hire.
Yeah,
and I think that they made a great hire in Mel Tucker. They thought it was turning around, and they just couldn't afford to keep him. And I think, you know, when you're dealing with a budget, you know, issue, and frankly, I mean, this ties into some of the conference realignment talk and stuff that's going on, right? It's like, you know, the Pac-12 cannot afford to keep elite coaches, and you can't afford to pluck them out of other schools a lot of times. So you got to either, you know, take a chance on a new up-and-comer, like a coordinator or like Tucker, right? Or your choices are kind of in a retread, like a Carl Durrell. So, you know, I think the Pac-12 woes have kind of contributed to the Colorado woes. They don't have an independent, I don't think, you know, financial donor culture that places like Oregon, obviously, or, you know, even like UW and USC. So, you know, I think the budget issues are really impacting them.
It was the one team that I saw over the weekend that I thought, it's tough for me to find wins after.
They look terrible. After what I saw that. If they don't win this weekend, they may not win a game.
It's going to be hard. Saturday started off real early, 11:30 a.m. Bowling Green at UCLA. It was 100 degrees in the Rose Bowl. They said they sold 20,000 tickets. There might have been 5,000 fans there. And you can blame some of that on the weather, but USC filled up. So they had a lot of people in the same weather. Wow. So this was a tough start. They were down in the second quarter. Bruins were down in the second quarter, which is crazy. 23.5-point favorite, but they would ultimately cover 45-17. DTR passed for 300 yards, 2 passing touchdowns, and 2 rushing TDs. He had a hell of a game. Just did not. It took him a while to get things moving.
Yeah, you know, I think this UCLA team, there's kind of a wide spectrum of outcomes. I don't know if you guys follow Equity Bruin and David Woods, who are kind of UCLA guys on Twitter.
Yep.
Those guys they're very entertaining just generally about the Pac-12. But they were also, I think, especially David Woods, pretty critical of UCLA and how they look this weekend. Even though we look up at the scoreboard and go, oh, they crushed Bowling Green. It's like BT said, it was kind of a little closer than the score made it look. And this team just has not recruited the state of California very well in the last few years. They have not recruited up front very well in the last few years. And you can't just turn that around, even though you have a huge, you know, cache of skill players that they've built up down there. So I think that's another game where I could see it going either way for the Huskies. I'm kind of glad that we get them a little early. But yeah, that's going to be another interesting team to watch.
A game that a lot of people penciled in as a loss for us, and now we're playing on a Friday. But if you watch the first half of that game, they look susceptible, even though they obviously had a really nice season last year. Hey, another one. Here's a team. I wish we were talking more about this. Zona played at San Diego State on CBS. Aztecs were favored by 5.5. Remember, they beat them down in Tucson last year. This was really wild, man. Same thing, 100 degrees out there. Spoiling the Aztec opening with a 38-20 upset. It should have been a little bit more, but they had some crazy plays. I don't know if you saw the punt that they had in the end zone where the cover man just sort of shifted left and it just punted right into his butt for a touchdown. Jacob Cowing is a receiver. The transfer just went off, and I thought they looked really, really good. Arizona surprised me.
Deloria was sharp. They were moving the ball with efficiency. Arizona looks like they're on a roll, and Jed Fish, you know, kind of towards the end of last year, you know, the recruiting success that they've had there. Now, if that's translating onto that field, wow. But all the intangibles on that, right? Think about that game. The Aztecs were opening their brand new stadium, right? all the energy was going towards them, right? We're playing a team that's been 1-16 over the last two seasons.
Crushed them 38-10 last year in their house, right?
Yep. And here was the thing. Arizona looked good in the trenches. They were blowing San Diego State off of the line. And I was like, whoa, this could be really interesting to see if Arizona actually starts getting rolling.
I think what's going to be tough about the Pac-12 this year is that the middle is – I mean, you know where the bottom is, right? You know Colorado's at the bottom. But the middle is really – it's always kind of a tough conference in that way. But the middle is really thick this year. It's
going to – From what we saw week one, it's elevated its game. Let's transition to someone who did not elevate their game. One of the big ones on TV, 12:30, Oregon at Georgia on ABC. Georgia was favored by 16.5, seemed to be kind of a darling pit to cover. What an absolute bludgeoning, 49-3. It looked like middle school JV out there. Dan Lanning completely out of his element. I mean, this is crazy. I saw their leading rusher was Bo Nix, and he had like 13 yards. What an absolute mess.
That Georgia defense last year, I mean, to my eye, it looked like maybe one of the best college football has ever seen. And I say that, you know, with a, you know, kind of a heavy heart, like that 91 Washington team, like we think of as having one of the best defenses of all time. That Georgia D looked pretty damn good last year. And yeah, like they just absolutely dominated. This is one where I really have a lot of conflicting feelings. I mean, if you'd asked me 10, 15 years ago, I would have said, who do you like, Oregon or, you know, the Russians? And I'll be like, give me the Russians. you know, and now I think we are kind of in this thing together in this unraveling Pac-12. And it just, you know, I obviously love to see them get crushed, and I, you know, I'll drink a glass of champagne to it, you know, but it's also kind of, it's a double-edged sword because it just weakens the entire conference so much to have games like this, that, you know, how is Washington ever going to crack that national conversation this season if we were to get rolling and go 10-0 when you just look around and go, yeah, but Oregon, you know, didn't even belong on the field. So why, what, you know, what makes you think you belong on the field? I think we have to be cognizant of that.
It's roofie champagne, Tuttle. That's the danger that you're running into.
That's a brand.
That's a brand now. You know, I, the other interesting angle of this, which, you know, it comes to mind, is this maybe a little bit of the risk of hiring the hot coordinator that's out there versus the little bit more ho-hum CEO type of head coaching hire that has done it at a lower level and shown success in the preparation that they put in for games. I don't know, right? Like, certainly it's one game, way too small of a sample size against a very, very elite Georgia team. But man, there's some stuff that looked just super disorganized. Maybe we'll look back at this. Hindsight could be 2020 to say, man, you know, like, just here comes the peril in hiring the hot DC.
I thought the exact same thing. Maybe Lanning actually sucks. I mean, he's a good recruiter. No one could take that away from him. I mean, they just signed another four-star with them today, right? So, I mean, no one's going to take away from the fact that he's a great recruiter. But, I mean, You got to win games on the field or it's not going to matter that much.
It wasn't just getting dominated, I think, talent-wise, but they shot themselves in the foot. How many false start penalties? You know, how many plays were just look like everyone, the entire secondary is just staring at each other. Where am I supposed to even be on the field? But, yeah, tough look for the Pac-12, but, you know, I don't know, screw you, Ducks. So, hey, let's keep going. This one was a little harder, and I think this one hurt us. Big one, Utah traveled to Gainesville. Utes favored by 4, Florida coming off that 6-7 season. Florida 29, Utah 26. Utah couldn't score twice within the 6-yard line down to the last play. You saw it. This was tough.
Yeah. Not a good showing by the Utes. This was really an important game for arguably preseason the darling of the Pac-12, picked to win the conference again with the players that they had returning against a supposed middling SEC Florida team, which, you know, we'll see what happens. The year's got to play out, but that's the one I personally feel like really hurt the Pac-12. That was the shot, really, from my perspective. That was the one that the Pac-12 needed to win from a conference perspective.
Yeah, so, I mean, we were talking about San Diego State, and I'm assuming we're going to talk about Oregon State and Boise State. In the years past, the middle to the bottom of the Pac-12 has been taking huge, catastrophic losses to the Mountain West, right? The best teams in the Mountain West beat our lower to middle tier Pac-12 teams, and it just and over the last whatever it is 5-8 years or whatever, they're like 11-12 against the Pac-12, right? And they hang that over everybody's head. And here is, you know, the best team we have in the Pac-12 going into SEC country, and we're doing what is it, the ninth one of these in the last however many 10 years, and Washington definitely owns a couple of these, right? LSU and Auburn, Oregon had, but I mean, they're just, you know, and a lot of those games were close. You know, the two Auburn games were pretty close, but we can't even beat with our best team on the field, the middle of the SEC, you know, and it just, again, it just goes back to this gap, this widened gap between the conferences. And, you know, it's you have to seize these opportunities on the field or you can't ever close it.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough one, and it's going to get a lot more airplay than I think when you talk about those Mountain West losses. We talked about those a lot, but I don't think I got as much airplay as this one. You know, the narrative this week is it's over. You know, it's over. But look, Florida could ultimately end up being a strong team. They're going to be, I think they're ranked in the top 15 already. People recognizing
if Florida's strong. If Florida finishes 8-4 or 9-3 or something, it's like, then what's the big deal, right? I mean, I think we can get behind that. Yeah.
Yeah, they can. It was a tough one for Cam Rising, who had a lot of different opportunities with that final play. He had extra downs. He could have thrown it away. He could have done a lot of different things. But look, you know, cry me a river, us Seattle fans who see games ending with an interception, you know, close to the goal line. We've seen it before. But yeah, tough one for our friends down at Utah. And let's hope they pull it back together. A couple ones I want to just bang through real quick. Cal hosted UC Davis. Bears were favored by 21. A rare push, a very rare push, 34-13. Cal with a slow. Again, a slow start. You know, 3 points and a pick on its first four drives before Plummer finally found his groove. Wilcox D struggled. They gave up 400 yards to UC Davis.
Ooh,
another one that was kind of interesting. Other side of the bay, Stanford hosting Colgate. 41.5-point spread. They'd win, but they don't cover 41-10. You know, Emmett Smith's kids, EJ Smith, he looks good. 118 yards and two TDs. So, you know, it's tough to tell with Stanford and Colgate, but a comfortable win, at least, even if they don't cover. There's the one that looked a little ugly. Wazoo hosting Idaho State, 6:30 on Pac-12 Network. Cougs were favored by 28. They did not. Look, this was ugly. Wazoo goes into the half 10-10. They win 24-17. Not pretty at all, man. Cameron Ward comes over from an Arcane at Ward. That was what pushed Jane Delore over to Zona. They just really struggled with this. Idaho State looked like they could have taken this from them, but Wazoo, I don't think anyone is, you know, if that was your darling pick for the year, you're not feeling too strong about yourself. Let's spend a little bit more time on these final two, though. Oregon State hosting Boise State, 7:30. Beavs were favored by 3. Maybe not that national spotlight, but this one was one the Pac-12 needs. 34-17, a real nice win. Beaver defense scored 5, forced 5 turnovers on this one. If a Jonas Smith team can get the Oregon State defense running, everybody else needs to be concerned.
And they're going to be a tough out. And we don't have the divisions anymore, but I mean, you know, we have to play them every year as a North, I guess, scheduling division now. So they will be on the schedule, and that's going to be a tough out. I also think, you know, it's worth saying Boise State is not what it was when Chris Peterson was there. They are coasting on a little bit of that reputation. But, you know, I'm not trying to take anything away from Oregon State. I'm just saying this is not like an elite Mountain West team you were playing. This was a top half of the Pac-12 team beating up on a top half team in the Mountain West. I think that's what it was.
This is a game that we've lost every other year, if not every year for the last 5-6 years, though, as a conference.
Yeah, no, that's true. Mm-hmm. And by winning those, you know, you can start to put that to rest. I mean, we're going to get into the CFP stuff a little bit later, but, you know, the first, you know, reacted to on that was this top six conferences send their conference champions. Are we going to be in the top six? You know, you got to win games like this in September, you know, to be in the top six. And so I think that's one of those things that we need to be looking for.
Last word of the week, we got to talk about USC 66-15 over Rice. They looked the part. This was one of those years where it finally did, scored on every possession through three quarters. Wow. Three pick sixes. I get it. It's Rice, but wow. They looked
the great. Last time they put up 60 points was 2005. BT.
That was a good team.
I couldn't team. When I heard that, I was like, oh, I think they still have some work to do on D. I know they got the three pick sixes, but I mean, you know, obviously Caleb Williams, their offense, they look good. I think we'll see. They're definitely going to be a contender in this Pac-12, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they are, I think, and they looked the part, but let's see. They've got a tough game that we're going to talk about this week. So look, this is how we ended up. With the Pac-12, we went from two ranked teams now. Two ranked teams. Eight for the SEC, five for the ACC, four for the Big Ten, three for the Big 12. We are tied with the independents. There's only a handful of those. This week, I'm just going to do rapid fire real quick. And then at the end of this, I want to hear what it's interesting to you guys. So we start off bright and early Saturday, 10:30 a.m. Southern Utah at now number 13 Utah on Pac-12 Network. I can't find a line on that. I think it's going to be big. Here's an interesting one. CU at Air Force on CBS. A lot of eyeballs on this. Air Force favored by 17. That one shocked me. Same time. Yep. This one could get ugly. Wazoo travels to number 19 Wisconsin. Again, 17-point line. We already talked about Portland State coming to UW at 1 o'clock. Same time as that, UNLV at Cal, the 13-point favorite. 2 p.m., Alabama State at UCLA. They better look good in that. 4:30, this is a big one for the Pack. Real big one. ASU at number 12, Oklahoma State. Cowpokes favored by 11. Could be a nice upset spot there. Pac-12 play opens up every year because of stupid Notre Dame. They do this to us. We got to start Pac-12 play in week two. Number 10 now, USC at Stanford. Trojans just a 9-point favorite. 5:30, Eastern Washington at then number 11, now unranked Oregon, completely falling out of the ranks, going against an Eastern Washington team that is scary. Night game, 7:30, Oregon State at Fresno, Beavs favored by just one. And the last one, here's a real interesting one, another SEC matchup. He's back, Mississippi State and Mike Leach at Arizona, 8 p.m. on FS1. What are you guys looking forward to?
Wow. There's a lot to choose from that list. I like the night games a lot. That Oregon State Fresno State game, fascinating to me. You got Jeff Tedford, Jake Hayner at Fresno State. They're going to put up points, and I want to see what happens with that Beaver defense. And then that Mississippi State Arizona game. Wow, that is just going to be very, very interesting. I want to see what happens there, especially seeing Arizona come off of that that big upset against San Diego State. Those are the two that I'm going to have just be glued and having a great time watching.
Honestly, those are going to be my exact two. I think those are two huge games for the conference, too. I mean, last year I would have looked at those and go, you're going to lose them both, right? And this year, you know, I think those are looking winnable. I'll just throw in the ASU at Oklahoma State. So much attention in the last 2 months has been on this Pac-12 versus the Big 12, right? And here we go, where Oklahoma State, maybe now the class of the Big 12. You know, mm-hmm. them and Baylor basically are kind of the class of the Big 12 at this point. The 2024 and beyond Big 12. But ASU, you know, with a chance there to pull an upset that would really, I think, kind of fuel the fire there. So, BT, I also don't know if you mentioned Wazoo at Wisconsin. Did you mention that one?
But, I sure did. Yeah, Wazoo at number 19, Wisconsin. Yeah, Wisconsin favored by 17.
I mean, honestly, I would lay the points on that one based on what I saw from the Cougs. But, you know, the Cougs have been kind of a little dangerous road team. In recent years, that's another opportunity for the conference, right? Those are opportunity games, the ones I'm mentioning here, where, you know, you're kind of double digit underdogs in both of those, but not, you know, Oregon versus Georgia underdogs. So
I'm excited to see the Mississippi State faithful traveling to Tucson for a road game and just feeling like they got off on another planet. that'll be fun to see them enjoying themselves. Oregon State, how bad is the athletic department's budget that they're doing home and homes with Fresno? Well, you know, they're not shelling that out, and they're doing road games down at Fresno, which is a tough place for them.
Oh, and the Mountain West, the Mountain West fans, let me tell you, somebody who went to a Huskies at Boise State game, I mean, the fans hate the Pac-12 more than anything. We might as well have all been wearing Ducks jerseys, and it might have been walking to Husky Stadium. Like, that's what it was like. Which caught me very off guard. And I bet you when they get into the Central Valley, they're going to be like, what do we ever do? Like,
we're Corvallis. Give us
we're just the Beavers. Yeah.
But like, they feel slighted from an attention perspective, and they feel slighted from thieving coaches, thieving quarterbacks, like take your pick. And you know, that Arizona State at Oklahoma State, that could be a good look. The one that's crazy to me was that 17 point line Colorado at Air Force. And I get it, they're Boise State, but that is tough.
Colorado looked so bad. And again, that's a home and home. You're at your Mountain West in-state rival, I guess, so to speak. But Colorado looked so bad. How could they be? How could you make this line any different and get somebody to actually take the Buffs in this game?
That's right. It's going to be really interesting for the Pack this week. I'm excited to see a little bit more of the play and see who ends up showing up this week. One more thing to talk about before we close the books on this episode. Some news, CFP expansion. Hit me with the headlines.
Yeah, well, so basically the SEC and what was called this work group of a couple other conference commissioners and Jack Swarbrick of Notre Dame, right, had come up with this plan last year about expanding the CFP. And the commissioners, including Klyavkov and the so-called alliance that's made totally, you know, a bunch of jokes about now, but they all blocked this from happening, right? And so what happened? Well, the university presidents, who actually, you know, are the constituency that these commissioners work for, were like, wait, you're going to leave $2 billion just sitting there? we're going to actually, vote for this thing and pass it. And so that's what happened. So basically the new system is going to be a 12-team CFP beginning at 2026, unless they can renegotiate some of the existing deals, including with the Bulls and things like that. But the six best conferences, as determined by the selection committee, their champions will automatically qualify, and the top six at-large teams will also qualify. The top four conference champions will have a bye, and the top four remaining teams will host a first round playoff game in their home stadium. So, you know, this would have meant a few years ago when the Huskies played Penn State, for example, in the Fiesta Bowl, we would have been on the road, you know, maybe at Penn State, for example, or, you know, or something like that. So anyway, the new system is going to be have those components. It's a little bit more subjective it's a little more objective than what it has been, but you still have this subjective criteria of the selection committee doing these analyses, coming up with the seeding and all that, a lot like they do for the basketball tournament, right? So it will go into effect as no later than 2026. And, I think this is overall, this is a positive development if you are an opponent of the now accumulating super conferences, right? This is going to potentially slow down the realignment, because now that you have Mountain West, Big 12, Pac-12 schools that are going to be able to actually earn it on the field to get into this thing, they're probably going to be a little less likely to want to jump out into those other conferences, or there's less likely to be more further consolidation. However, I just think it's really important. Something that we do not know yet, that has not been determined, is how the revenue sharing is going to work on this. And, you know, if it were me and I was George Kliavkov, I'd say, okay, any conference that qualifies for this should get an equal piece of the equal college football.
Yep.
But we know that that's not the SEC's MO here. They want to have four teams in. They want to have a final four of the SEC teams, right? And they're going to want, you know, a disproportionate revenue share on that. So I think those details, once they're worked out, we'll be able to say for sure, like, whether or not this is good for the Huskies, whether this is good for the Pac-12. So far, so good. But I think those details are going to matter big time.
That's super interesting. I'm sure I'm glad that I at least got our kids one trip to the Rose Bowl under our belt, because that's going away in 2020.
Yeah.
You know, quite frankly, I'm okay with that considering what the Big Ten has done. You know what? I'm 100% down with that because, like, the game has changed now. We, you know, it's different. It takes two to tango. And quite frankly, we're moving towards a different model. So, like, you know, it was great. We got to experience that. Like, bring on the 12-team playoff, man. It can't get here soon enough from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and how that's going to work is the top seeds who have the bowl contract. So, for example, if Ohio State is the number one seed, they'll have the Rose Bowl. And that will be the, you know, quarterfinal game or whatever. Right. But that's not necessarily going to be tied to the Pac-12 as the home team, as the top team with their. But if USC, or for example, was number one, it would be their Rose Bowl, and they'd play whoever number, you know, five, and whoever wins the 4-5 game or whatever.
Yeah, but it's lost all its pageantry, its history of like the. It's totally top pack. It's just dead. Who cares, dude?
Right.
It's totally dead.
Yeah, it definitely makes all of those interesting old, you know, Cotton Bowl, Sugar Bowl, and et cetera, and conference alignments sort of go out the window. And that it's, you know, you're ultimately at March Madness. You know, it's a March Madness version that is palatable to the injury concerns, meaning you can't have a 64-team playoff. But this is what this becomes. You know, you'll have a big reveal behind it.
You're already going to have, and at large is going to have to win four games. To win wild, this playoff, right? You go to 64, you're only getting six games.
That's right. So, you're not too far off.
There are coaches out there. I think Mississippi State's AD was quoted as saying, "Oh yeah, Leach wants to go to 64." It's not crazy. It's not that crazy now that we're already at 12. But I would like to see them go to 16. You know, if nothing else, just for the fairness component, these teams that are going to have a bye and be collecting more revenue in the process, I think that is really detrimental to the sport. Personally,
you're not talking about it, but you could see this. You could see them taking away the conference championship game, though, and saying, "Look, if we got to play four or even three more, do we need to have the SEC championship? Do we need to have the Pac-12 championship, or do we just call the regular season? That's it. That team's done enough. They got another four games to win, three games to win."
Or you just call it the playoffs. You call it the playoffs. If your conference that gets 12 or 16 teams, you get two bids. And so your playoff game is against your own conference. And then, that's another way to fold it in. Because you're right. You have to win four games in this playoff and a conference championship game. You're already at five games. Might as well be at 64.
That's right. Now you're essentially at an NFL schedule with 19-year-olds at this point. I mean, you're at 16, 17 games.
Exactly.
It's going to be wild. But look, money drives all, as we know. Let's wrap this thing up. Great to be back in college football. It felt this year for the first time in the stadium to me, mostly just normal. Versus last year, just still felt like, you know, spending time getting your COVID card checked and everything else that we did. And are people coming? Are people not coming? You know, who's in, who's out? And this just felt like a great back to the old days of college football. Watching the Huskies behind a coach that I think we're all really excited about. Let's get Portland State this weekend. Let's come back next week and talk about it. I will have a full trip report from Austin, Texas, game day, going down there to watch Texas and Alabama. And I'll be able to compare it to what we see. You know, I mean, it basically flip of the coin with that in Portland State. Like, it's going to... I'm excited.
Yeah, make sure to get a picture, a selfie with Urban Meyer, BT.
I was just thinking about that. I'm sure he's waiting for the same thing. He's like, how do I get a selfie with that Dogpod podcast host, the longest running Husky podcast? I think he's going to be looking for me. Fellas, it's great to have all three of us back. Can I get a go Dogs?
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs. Oof. Oof.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.